From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Justified by 3/4 of a length. Baldoro trying ever so hard, but Justify, another exhilarating exhibition by the supremely gifted athlete. He's on a dizzying ascent to greatness.
Oh, what a one this is! It is Vino Rosso in front. Enticed continues to battle him, but Vino Rosso's getting away. Restoring hope is stirred. Vino Rosso, fantastico in the one memorial.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
It's Lone Sailor, Noble Indy, my boy Jack, toward the rail, Noble Indy and Lone Sailor, Noble Indy to win the Louisiana Derby.
Good Magic with the lead. Flame Away giving everything he's got but second. Sporting Chance third. Free Drop Billy in fourth. Linden Citizen fifth. Good Magic to the front of the field in the Toyota Bluegrass.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, alongside the voice of Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky. That is Kurt Becker, who is sitting in for the Pontiff of the Pick Four this morning as we come to you live from a rain-soaked, a gray, dreary, cool, kind of nasty-looking Pimlico Racecourse on this Preakness Stakes morning. Yeah, and that has been the scenario throughout the week. The rain has been falling heavily at times on and off for much of the past 3 or 4 days in the Baltimore area. It continues. The racetrack, just a sea of slop here, and expect a wet racetrack for the running of the Preakness later this afternoon. Kurt, look, I describe it, I paint that picture, and I let people know how nasty it really is here today on the weather front. But in terms of what we're going to see here today on the racing side of things, we have what many people believe could be the sport's next superstar in Justify, who goes to the post in the Preakness. He'll try to make it two in a row, and of course that victory in the Derby weighing heavily on the competitors who are going to try and take him down later today. Seven other rivals. The runner-up in the Derby, Good Magic, back to take another shot at Justify. A lot of storylines to talk about.
Yeah, there really are, and with Justify, I always enjoy it when a horse like this comes onto the scene. There are a lot of folks that are ready to declare him one of the greats, certainly of the current crop, which I would agree. But then we get into that debate, where does, you know, already within four career starts, there are people debating where this horse ranks all time. And, you know, and I respect the fact, it's fun when a horse like this comes along and is so impressive so early in his career that he generates that kind of talk. By the same token, I can remember, you remember Fusaichi Pegasus?
Sure.
And,
sure.
You know, he was a $4 million yearling. He looked spectacular in the Kentucky Derby. And then he came here to the Preakness, and he got beat by Red Bullet, who had been sitting on the sidelines resting up for the race. So, you know, I'm of the camp. I love the discussion. I love the debate. I'm not ready to coronate Justify just yet, but he's definitely the horse to beat here today.
We were at dinner last night, and they had some of the old program pages kind of mounted on the wall, and Fusaichi Pegasus and that Preakness Stakes was one of them. And it was, you know, just a listing of the horses and their trainers and the jockeys, and it had the morning line odds next to them. And it caught my eye last night. Fupeg 3-5 on the morning line that year when he was defeated by Red Bullet. You remember Kent DeSormo, I believe, was aboard Fupeg.
Right.
And he, you know, as you said, he didn't get it done. Now Justify 1-2 on the morning line. And you and I, when we covered the post draw on Wednesday, both kind of looked at each other afterwards, and I think we were a bit surprised to see him that low.
Yeah. I know,
no disrespect to Justify.
No.
That's a low morning line.
But this is one of the things among many things that's so enjoyable about this sport. It's I love the debate, the discussion, the back and forth. Should he be where he is on the morning line? You know, is he going to sweep the Triple Crown series and so on? But to your point about the morning line, I will say this. When I went back and I took a look at the last 4 to 5 years of the morning line for the Preakness and then compared it to the post-time odds, and of course the odds maker is just trying to get a gauge on how he thinks the public will see the race, how they will bet the race.
Sure.
he's been pretty much on target. Generally speaking, he's been right in the ballpark in these last few years, so we'll see if Keith gets it right again this year.
And before we get into all of our Preakness discussion and tell you what's ahead here on the Equine Forum over the course of the next 2 hours, and then what's coming up later this afternoon on the network as we take you through Preakness 143, just want to extend our thoughts and our prayers to all of the families and the children and everybody affected with that school shooting in Texas yesterday. Just a horrific event. And we are here talking about a horse race. And yeah, it's the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And in terms of our world and horse racing, that's a big deal. But it's just a horse race. And you see these things that happen in our country from time to time. And it just reminds you, it puts everything in perspective. And you know, just our thoughts, our prayers are with everybody affected in that horrible tragedy.
And that that has been the case around Pimlico ever since the tragic news broke. The horseman's community here have paused and reflected on it, and indeed that is something that you've captured it very well, Mike, that it does put things in perspective, it does put things in a certain context, and indeed our thoughts are with the folks in Texas.
All right, here's what's ahead over the course of the next 2 hours. After our first commercial break, in about 5 or 6 minutes from now, you're going to hear from breeder Tanya Gunther, who is the daughter of John Gunther at Glenwood Farm. They are the breeders and the consigners who sold Justify. And she had a chance to visit with me. She was actually over in England. I don't know if she's attending the royal wedding today, but she was over in England earlier this week, and she sat down and talked to me for a few minutes, and she talked about Justify as a baby and then going through the sales ring. And then she talked about what it was like to see him cross the finish line first at Churchill Downs 2 weeks ago. So we're going to hear from Tanya coming up in a few minutes. Vance Hansen is with Brisnet.com. One heck of a handicapper. He's going to stop by in person with us here at Pimlico and share his thoughts on the Preakness, maybe help you pick a winner. We'll hear from him at 8:35 Eastern. Edgar Prado, the seemingly ageless Hall of Famer, recently recorded another milestone in his Hall of Fame career, 7,000 career victories when he won at Parks this past week, May 15th. It was race 6, and Edgar is going to be here at 9 o'clock to talk to us about that. Really looking forward to that visit. John Service, who sends out local horse Diamond King in today's Preakness, will be with us at 9:20 Eastern. And then at the end of the program, folks, stay tuned for this. Do not turn your radios off. Do not walk away from the radio at any point in this 2 hours because it's going to be loaded. But at the end of the program, 9:35 Eastern time, I had this Thursday morning after the Ally breakfast to sit down with Hall of Famers Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert, both of them six-time Preakness winners. Of course, they're going at it again this year with Wayne having two horses and Bob, of course, having Justify. They spent about 25 minutes with me, and it was one of the most unbelievable experiences I've had on radio to be able to just sit there and listen to them tell stories. We're going to play about the first 15 minutes of that for you here on the program this morning. The rest of that interview, the full interview, will air as part of our Trainer Talk show this coming Wednesday night on Sirius XM. But, boy, what an experience that was, and that's going to be one heck of an interview at the end of the program. Trust me.
Was it difficult to get those guys to open up?
A little bit. Yeah, it was like pulling teeth. You know, I kind of thought, okay, is this going to be Mike Maker-esque, or is this going to be more? You know, it wasn't. These guys were unbelievable. I didn't want to ask a question. I wanted to ask one question and let them talk, and that's pretty much what happened.
Just set the table and then get out of the way, so to speak, and let those guys go. No, they've had a great back and forth all week long. And, you know, you look at – here's Dwayne Lucas. He's, what, 82 years of age
mm-hmm.
now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's remarkable. Here's a guy that his first classic win was here in the Preakness back in 1980.
Yeah.
Still in the sport, still active, still relevant in the sport. And then the heir apparent, Bob Baffert – who, Wayne and Bob both have won 6 editions of the Preakness. If either one of them wins later today, they tie the all-time record for training wins, which dates back to the 19th century. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular. And, of course, more than that on the line for Justify, because if he wins today, he'll take that next step toward joining horses like American Pharoah and Affirmed and Secretariat and all the great Triple Crown winners we've had in this sport. And he'll try to do that 3 weeks from today in New York at Belmont Park, but he has to pass through the middle jewel first.
He does, and again, the Preakness over the years has been, it's been a pretty formful race. If you go back and look at the average win payoff among the three races in the Triple Crown Series in the last 25, 30 years, this is the one that holds closest to form, although, Mike, as you and I have talked, the Kentucky Derby, we've had, what, six straight years now,
sure,
the post-time favorite winning that race. I, you know, it's one of those things that you think back to horses. I give you an example, and I'm dating myself a bit here, but Riva Ridge was a horse that looked fantastic in winning the Kentucky Derby. Came here. They had a sloppy or a muddy track for that edition. The trainer, Lucian Lauren, had said, this horse is fine in the mud. His sire was fine in the mud. We're not worried about it. Goes off at 1-5 and then ends up getting beat by 18-1 outsider BBB. So, you know, if what's the old saying? If you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
But with that said, the thing about Justify is, you know, that when people have said to me, well, it looks like it's going to be a muddy or a sloppy track, so who do we go with? My first thought is, did you not see what happened 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I mean, the top two finishers from the Derby obviously relished the sloppy going at Churchill Downs, so Justify and Good Magic, to me, it's awfully tough to find an angle to go against those two horses here today.
And not only Justify being undefeated for his career, but he's undefeated on a wet track. That win at Churchill Downs, he had a big win at Santa Anita, too, over a wet track out there. So he can handle this type of surface, which is not good news for the other seven rivals trying to take him down later today. All right, we're going to get to a commercial break. We'll come back. Tanya Gunther is on the other side of this. Stay tuned, and you'll hear from her next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at FarmPaint.com. That's FarmPaint.com.
Tom's Ready, a multiple graded stakes winning millionaire by Sire of Sires More Than Ready. As a 3-year-old, Tom's Ready scored in the prestigious Grade 2 Woody Stevens Stakes at Belmont and defeated champion Run Happy in the Grade 3 ACAC at Churchill Downs before winning the Grade 3 Bold Ruler at 4, earning a 107 buyer, the co-fastest buyer at 7 furlongs in 2017. Tom's Ready, new for 2018 at Spendthrift Farm.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Have you been looking for high quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their three-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-588. 5480.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at Tony's Steaks and Seafood.
This is Bob Baffert, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
I mean, it's like having LeBron James on your team. You give to LeBron, you better win a championship with him. You know, that's the way we feel. But at the eighth pole, and you could tell, you're, we had, you know, I said, who's that coming? You know, it was good magic. Wow, he's a good horse, man. He's good. This is the toughest bunch that I've ever been involved with. And then that last 100 yards, you know, I knew that last eight, he was going to win. And I was just in awe of the performance. I mean, that's the best, you know, Kentucky Derby winning performance that I've brought up here, you know. And so, you know, he just put himself up there with the greats.
Powerful words from trainer Bob Baffert, who picked up his fifth Kentucky Derby victory 2 weeks ago at Churchill Downs. Justify putting himself up there with the greats, in the words of Bob, and we'll see if he can continue among the greats in the Preakness later this afternoon. He breaks from post 7, and that's been a pretty good place to be for the Bob Baffert runners. We told you at the top of the show that he's won the Preakness 6 times, twice from post 7. His first one with Silver Charm, and then looking at Lucky in 2010. So that's been a lucky post for Bob.
It has, and when Justify came on the scene earlier this year and Bob spoke so highly of this horse, there were folks that would say to me, well, what do you think? You know, he's calling the horse the most naturally gifted horse he's ever trained. Here's a guy that trained a Triple Crown winner just a few years ago. And I would tell people, well, you know, there's always that exuberance from a trainer, and, you know, the horse hasn't even been in a stakes race yet, and let's just take it easy. But to give credit where it's due, this colt has been an absolute monster, Justify has, and he's passed every test.
Mike Penna, Kurt Becker, back with you at Pimlico Racecourse here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This show for the month of May, all presented by our friends at farmpaint.com. If you are just tuning in, it is wet, it is cool, only in the mid to upper 50s right now. The rain continuing to fall. The racetrack just gooey and a sea of slop at the moment. And expecting more rain throughout the afternoon. And as we edge closer to post time for the Preakness 6:45, the rain is supposed to move on out. But trust me, with as much water as we've had here over the past few days, we're going to be looking at a wet track and a very soft turf course. Speaking of that, my beautiful wife Michelle just passing me a note here just a couple of minutes ago that all of the races, the turf races on this Preakness day here at Pimlico, are off the turf with the exception of the Gallarette, which is race number 9. And that includes the Dixie, by the way, which traditionally has been the race run right before the Preakness. That race is going to be run earlier in the card now, and that is also off the turf. So keep that in mind. Everything except for the Gallarette, race 9. Off the turf today.
Yeah, yesterday the folks here at Pimlico made the decision to pull a couple of races off the turf. They left a couple on the grass, but it looked like those inside lanes got chewed up pretty good yesterday. So they have done a very good job this weekend, track management and the track superintendent of keeping abreast of the situation, doing all they can. But they've really been up against it here. I mean, it's been raining all week, folks. This isn't just a phenomenon where a few clouds rolled in this morning and caught everybody off guard. It has been this way. Mike, I know you landed here Tuesday. I landed Wednesday, and it has just been
nonstop.
It has. Just thick overcast and a constant drizzle. Then it'll pick up to a light shower. Then it'll back off. Then here it comes again.
All right, I forgot to throw out our poll question at the top of the show. I was so excited about being here for the Preakness again. By the way, our 11th consecutive year of broadcasting the Preakness here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. That coverage begins this afternoon, 3 o'clock Eastern, with coverage of the undercard races. Then we segue at 5 Eastern into that exclusive broadcast of Preakness 143. And that broadcast, of course, presented by TwinSpires.com. And you can tune in on affiliates across the country on SiriusXM satellite radio. That will all be on SiriusXM 93. Keep that in mind. That's a different channel than you're listening to right now. And it will be streamed worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. So the poll question for today, you can vote on our Twitter feed, at HRRN, or on Facebook. Going to keep it pretty simple. You remember the days of Tiger Woods when he was so dominant, and you would see a prop bet that was Tiger Woods versus the field. You could bet on either one of them. We're going to do the same thing here because Justify is such a prohibitive favorite in the Preakness. Who's going to win the Preakness? You can vote for Justify or you can vote for the field. You got two choices, Justify or everybody else. Who are you going to take to win the Preakness Stakes if you had to make that bet? We want to know. You can go to at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to weigh in. All right, well, Tanya Gunther, along with her father, John, operate Glenwood Farm in Kentucky. And they had the privilege of raising and selling Justify, and then the privilege of watching him mature into a tremendous racehorse and win the Kentucky Derby 2 weeks ago. And earlier, Tanya took the time to visit with me and talk about what this experience has been like.
Well, I spent a lot of time doing the meetings, making recommendations on all of the mares on the farm, and I do a lot of analytical work, perhaps because of my finance background before I focused solely on horses. And Scat Daddy was a stallion I'd looked at and identified as a stallion that I thought was on an upward curve, and I liked his numbers, and so he was one that I was looking to mate with some of our mares. And then I put together the idea of Stage Magic with that stallion and really liked the idea of inbreeding the two full sisters, among other things, in the pedigree. And that really excited me. And I look at the physical match as well, the mare and the stallion, and, you know, stamina, speed, and kind of all facets, and think about it sort of backward and forward. And that's how that mating idea came up.
Tell me a little bit more about Stage Magic. What's her story?
Stage Magic's a daughter of Ghost Sapper out of a mare that my dad had purchased at Keeneland a number of years ago, Magical Illusion. Stage Magic is a Hudson Black type for us. She was a nice filly, not a superstar, but quite a good filly and a hard-trying filly. And so she got some black type for us. And, you know, she perhaps wasn't the most correct individual, and I think that maybe held her back more than anything. You know, she tried really hard, but she didn't have the efficient movement, which you will see with Scat Daddy. I mean, sorry, Justify. And actually, Scat Daddy, when I went to see him as a young stallion, I remember thinking what a correct individual he was and how well he walked. And so perhaps that was a good combination with that mare.
You know, you mentioned the analytical approach to the breeding and the physical nature of it, looking at the physical makeup of the dam and the sire and putting those things together. And you're always hoping for the best, Tanya, but could you ever imagine that this would be the result when you plan this mating?
No, I don't think you could. I mean, Justify looks a lot like his mother. He's chestnut. She's chestnut with a white blaze, as is he. I was a little concerned that, you know, sometimes the Scat Daddies can be a bit small. But of course he is not. So he threw to the size that is capable within the female family. And also Scat Daddies as well. He's just a bit variable, I found on that front. So I was very pleased to have such a robust colt, which he was from day one. And, you know, he impressed on the upside on that front. You know, he wasn't just as good as could be expected. I would say he was better than could be expected in terms of size, substance, and just overall physique.
Take me back to the day that Justify was born. What do you remember about that moment?
Well, I wasn't there, but I certainly was aware. My dad and I were both up on opposite sides of the world watching the racing in Dubai and also Materiality in the Florida Derby later that day. So we had Tamar Coos win in Dubai and then Materiality later in the day in Florida, you know, en route to the Kentucky Derby. So it totally unrelated families, but a big day for us. And then this foal was born, and I remember thinking, he's a keeper, being born on that day. And of course, we took him to the sale eventually, but it was it stuck in my mind, that's for sure.
How would you describe him as a foal?
As a foal, he was always very robust, a strong character, both in his physique and also in his mind. He very early on developed this understanding of himself as being, you know, the top dog out there. So he was always kind of, let's call it an alpha dominant foal in the field and aggressive, I guess you could say. Not in a bad way, in a good way, but just, you know, he knew he was kind of a top foal, I suppose.
Really, can you tell early on if a horse has that, let's call it that it factor? Can you tell on your side of things if the horse has that?
I mean, we're always looking for that. You know, it doesn't necessarily pan out that they become the best racehorses when they are those dominant personalities. But in his case, he, of course, turned out to be quite talented, which is nice. But you can definitely see horses, you know, foals that are a bit more meek or more aggressive. You know, if he went out in the field, he wouldn't be, you know, running behind his mom, put it that way, where some foals would, and maybe they develop later on. But he was always a cheeky little guy or big guy, and was never, you know, afraid of humans or hiding from them. He always wanted to check it out and see what was going on. So you could see that from a very early age.
Tell me about making that decision to take him to the sales. How did that come about?
Well, we take basically most of our horses to the sale, so it's part of our program to take our yearlings to the sale. We'll keep the odd filly out of a mare or the odd horse here and there, but by and large, we take our whole group to the sale. I don't really love the selling game, but it's part of what we do. You know, we're breeders. We do race a bit, but by and large, we sell most of ours. So, you know, you always have some regrets when you enjoy the racing as much as we do. But in terms of cash flow and keeping the business going, we have always done that.
Yeah. Do you remember, was he popular at the barn when people were coming by to take a look? Did you get him out quite a bit?
Yeah, he was very popular. He and Vino Rosso both were out a lot. They were in the same book together, and they were out frequently and popular. So, you know, I expected that because those were two top colts.
You know, talk about that for a minute, Tanya. It's so many people would give their right arm just to have one horse the caliber of Vino Rosso or Justify, and you end up with two in the same sales consignment. Just remarkable. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, you can never anticipate that two out of, we had about 10, maybe 11 colts in our crop that year in the U.S. And, you know, to have two out of that, you can't anticipate it. I thought they were our top two colts. They were standouts in our group that year, but you can't imagine that they'll both go on to actually run in the classics, you know. So it was exciting to have them, you know, to have two nice colts to sell. But if you ask me, you know, did I know they were going to become, you know, Derby contestants and a winner? No.
All right, so then he gets to the Kentucky Derby. You followed his career, obviously, closely. Tell me about watching him beneath those twin spires at Churchill Downs.
Well, you know, he was, I guess, you know, I never really get very bullish on horses before they go out and do something. And so it was very unique for me when he went round in his maiden. I was visiting some of our horses in France, and I said to the person, a friend of mine, I said, we're going to get a TDN Rising Star today. This was before Justify's maiden. And then, of course, he went on and got that. And I've never said that in my life, actually, and I've never said it out loud to anyone, even if I hope for it to happen. And so from the beginning of his career, well, from when he was a foal in the beginning of his career, I had, I guess, expectations that he could do it. And then to watch him at the Derby and see how calm and collected he was coming across on the walkover, handling all of that, I just, you know, you can't help but be proud and see that small, you know, eager foal that had no fears go out there and become that adult that he is starting to become and act like that. It was a pretty special feeling.
All right. As somebody who has never had this opportunity, describe that moment, that feeling when Justify crosses the finish line first in the Kentucky Derby.
It's really hard to describe because it's so many emotions coming together at once, you know, because he just put on an amazing performance. So from a spectator's, you know, if you can be objective point of view, it was pretty special to watch. But then, you know, he came from your farm and you were part of raising him. It's just so many emotions. I felt like I was multiple personalities because I was crying and laughing and smiling and all the sort of gamut of emotions when he won, when he was coming down that stretch and I knew he was going to win. I just so many emotions. I can't really describe it.
Where did you watch the race?
We were in the Horsemen's area with a couple of Windstar, like a Windstar group. They had invited my dad and I to join them, which was very nice because we, you know, Churchill Downs doesn't really understand breeders as connections of the horse, so we weren't having much joy on that front. But Windstar was very generous to include us in part of their group, and so it was exciting, very exciting to watch the race with the owners. You know, we do a lot of business at Windstar with breeding to their stallions, and of course they had bought the horse off of us, and so it was, that made it more special, you know, watching it together with them and going down to the winner's circle with them. It was it made it very exciting.
Now you're in England, so where will you get a chance to watch the Preakness?
on my cell phone. Yeah, no, I'll probably try to find a better venue, but I will be watching it on some personal device, no doubt, and be on the phone with my dad, who will be watching it in Langley, where he lives, at a place called the Derby Bar and Grill. He likes to go there with his buddies and my brother and sister and watch the big races, and he has a good time doing that. And so we're normally on the phone around, you know, either before and or after the race, sometimes during the race. So we'll both be watching like that.
You know, that's the other aspect of racing that is so great. And I've talked to several people, like, let's say, Mark and Norm Cassie, who go down this road together as father and son. You're doing this as part of your entire family and your family's business. How special is it? And I assume it has to be more special when you're doing it together.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I left another career to focus on this industry because it was my passion. It is my dad's passion, and we've all been involved to one degree or another with horses. And so, I work very hard at it. So to have a success like Justify is just something, you know, you dream about. And, you know, my goal was always to come and help my dad try to breed a champion one day. And so to help him do that, which is a dream of his, it's beyond special. I can't really put it well enough into words to describe how important it is for us, you know.
Yeah, special indeed. That's Tanya Gunther, her and her dad John, who she just referenced in that interview. The breeders of Justify, who remains undefeated and looks to take the middle jewel of the Triple Crown later this afternoon here at Pimlico. And Kurt, very special on a lot of levels, not just because Tanya's involved with the breeding and her dad are involved with the breeding of this horse, but the fact that they're doing it together as father and daughter, and the amount of work and sacrifice that breeders put in to getting these horses foaled, getting them raised, getting them to the sales. It's just absolutely remarkable. So congratulations to them. And then to have two horses like Justify and Vino Rosso in the same sales consignment, are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's amazing. Justify sold in the opening session of that particular sale on a Monday, and then 2 days later, Vino Rosso goes through the auction ring on Wednesday at that same sale. So, you know, the emotion that you heard in Tanya's voice, I think, goes a lot to the family aspect. It's a big deal when you watch your father invest years of his life into this game where there are no guarantees, and you never know how it's going to work out. And then to see it not only pay off and see the fruits of the hard work, but at the highest level of the game in the race that everybody wants to say they've bred a Kentucky Derby winner, and it works out for the Gunther family with Justify. You know, one other thing, there's that old saying about being thankful for unanswered prayers. Well, when Tanya talked about stage magic, and she talked about how she and her dad raced that mare who's now the dam of Justify,
yeah.
They tried to sell Stage Magic as a yearling. And you heard her reference that she wasn't correct, so to speak, didn't check all the boxes confirmationally for what the trainers wanted. She was a buyback. She did not meet her reserve price. She was a buyback for $70,000. I'm guessing that everybody at Glenwood Farm is thankful for how that one worked out.
Wow, just amazing. Just another part of this story that is so fascinating with Justify. And again, he'll go for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown later this afternoon. You'll hear all the coverage with us beginning 3 o'clock Eastern time here on the network. Undercard coverage 3 to 5 Eastern with Anthony Stabile and Dan Mason. 5 o'clock Eastern, our entire broadcast team together with you to take you through Preakness 143 here at Old Hilltop. That coverage all presented by our friends at TwinSpires.com. All right, it is time for your Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington. When we come back, Vance Hansen, who is with Brisnet.com, is going to help you pick a winner in this afternoon's Preakness Stakes. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
There have been performances by horses on the racetrack that bear more than considerable note, and there have been horses of the same milk over a period of time. This is a story of a combination of both, a horse and a performance that are five-star in every category. Quote, "It won't be the same on Saturdays without Kelso, will it?" said the fat man. That perfunctory statement sums up the whole story. The story of Kelso in the Jockey Club Gold Cup run on the Saturday of Halloween in October of 1964. It was a golden autumn day for a golden thoroughbred, 51,000 fans on hand at Belmont Park, Long Island's grand dame of racing. They had come to pay homage to One in a Million as a horse. People had waited 40 years for Kelso. There had been nothing like him since Exterminator in the 1920s and Man o' War of the same vintage. All there were great horses in the interim, Gallant Fox, Citation, Equipoise, Discovery, Native Dancer, Cavalcade, Count Fleet, 20 Grand, Armed Swaps, and Tom Fool, to recount just a few. There were some that occupied a very special place in the hearts of racing fans. The beloved Seabiscuit, War Admiral, Whirlaway, Alsab, Stymie, and Carryback, just to name a few. None had that rare and indefinable quality of absolute excellence of Exterminator, Man o' War, and now Kelso. His greatest single contribution to racing was in being a hero, a role model to be loved and admired. Not because of physical beauty, since he was actually underweight. And he was awkward and often seemed ill at ease. He was sort of like a homely girl who had donned her very best party dress but was doomed as a wallflower. He had a lackluster coat, and no matter what they tried to do to dress him up, as it were, he was still just plain old Kelso. You had to shake your head at Kelly, because you could never imagine him to be a champion among champions. The Jockey Club Gold Cup was virtually a permanent trophy of his, and he'd won it 4 years in a row. Unheard of, but here he was trying to make it 5 in a row at the age of 7 over the grueling 2-mile distance. This was to be the last race run in New York for him. After some 1¾ miles of the Great Classic, he was second, right behind the dead game Little Roman Brother, who'd given it all he'd had. Then Milo Valenzuela made his move aboard Kelso, and he charged at the leader. There was no need for the crowd to vent an encouraging "Come on, Kelly," as they'd done when he waged his stretch battles with Iron Peg in the Suburban and Gunbow in the Woodward. It was all over at the quarter pole, and everybody there knew it. And then an awesome thing happened. The 51,000 on hand went eerily silent for a moment, and then, just as woe on cue, 102,000 hands began to clap in unison, hands beating rhythmically in time with Kelso's stride, cadence clapping a la European style for admiration of something special. It was like a Mahler concerto of human emotion. Kelso crossed the wire a winner in his fifth consecutive Jockey Club Gold Cup in a time of 3:19.1, a new track and American record for 2 miles. There was a wistful sadness inherent in the lengthening shadows of that fall afternoon. Summer was taking its last breath. Winter's frostiness lay just around the corner. The world would grow older, and so would Kelso. Like the fat man said, it won't seem like Saturday without Kelso. No, and there probably will never be another Saturday like that one, October 27, 1964, when Kelly won his fifth straight Jockey Club Gold Cup in what may very well have been the single greatest moment in all of Thoroughbred Racing's marvelous history.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Boss, there's a photographer out here who wants to do a piece on Jimmy John's for her magazine.
What kind of piece?
Well, she heard about a clothing optional delivery policy and...
Did you tell her the naked driver incident was a momentary misunderstanding?
Yes, sir, but...
Did you tell her it's our meats that are going all natural, not our drivers?
Yes, sir, that's not...
Did you tell her Jimmy John's is committed to serving sandwiches with only the finest all-natural ham, roast beef, salami, bacon, and real fresh turkey breast?
Yes, sir, I did, sir.
So she wants to photograph our sandwiches?
No, sir. Actually, she wants to do a calendar.
A what?
A calendar. You know, the men of Jimmy John's.
Dibs on January.
Order Jimmy John's sandwich delivery today. Jimmy John's, where fresh and fast meet.
The fifth running of the Grade II $500,000 Penn Mile is set for Saturday, June 2nd at Hollywood Casino at Penn National. Featuring many of the best three-year-old turf horses in the country on an afternoon that includes an all-stakes, all-turf late pick four and a special post time of 3:45 p.m. Eastern. Nominations close Wednesday, May 23rd. Call 717-469-3235 to nominate today. It's the Grade II $500,000 Penn Mile, Saturday, June 2nd at Hollywood Casino at Penn National.
Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by four lengths.
A five-time Grade One winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined nine lengths.
And they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a five-race winning streak.
Point of Entry hails from a remarkable female family, with his first four dams Grade One winners and or producers. Now with winners in six countries on all surfaces from 5.5 to 10 furlongs, including the sensational undefeated Greatest Stakes winner, Analyze It, widely regarded as the best turf horse in his crop. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry. Visit adinastallions.com.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
Back at a rainy Pimlico racecourse in Baltimore, the rain continuing to fall. The racetrack as sloppy as you're going to see, so expect a wet track for the running of the Preakness later this afternoon. Post time for the Preakness, 6:45 Eastern. We're going to take you all the way through that race here on the Horse Racing Radio Network with our exclusive coverage. I'm Mike Penna. Kurt Becker is the voice of racing at Keeneland. He is sitting in for the Pontiff of the Pick Four on this edition of the Equine Forum this morning. And we turn our attention now to Vance Hansen, who is with Brisnet.com. And Vance has been there about 10 years. He is a native of the Twin Cities and now here attending his second Preakness Stakes. And Vance, I billed you earlier as being one heck of a handicapper, so don't let us down.
I will try not to. No pressure.
Happy Preakness Day.
Thanks, same to you.
Yeah, so you told me your first Preakness was actually when Shackelford won.
Yeah, it was, and it was a great experience. It was my third time at Pimlico altogether. I'd come on two previous occasions, but that was a great Preakness, and I think one of the other highlights of the weekend for me was seeing Royal Delta win her first stakes race in the Black Eyed Susan that Friday. So memorable weekend for me, and obviously the weather was a lot nicer than it has been this week.
Were you always a horse racing fan growing up?
I was. My dad started going to the races at Canterbury when it opened in 1985, and it took me about a year or two to start joining him at the races. I was about 9, 10 years old, and I got immediately hooked. And from that age on, I wanted to make it a career, and it's turned out that way very well.
Speaking of Canterbury Downs, you bring up a good point, because not every racetrack in America can host a Triple Crown race. Not every racetrack gets to host the Breeders' Cup. Your experience originally came through Canterbury. My first time to a pari-mutuel track was Fairmount Park in Collinsville, Illinois.
Wow.
How important are regional racetracks to develop interest in this game?
Obviously very important. If you look around the landscape of racing media today, from television to chart callers at Equibase and to myself and others, there's a lot of Canterbury grads out there. They're very prominent in the industry today, and if you go back 30 years, I mean, that was kind of before the age of full-card simulcasting. Being on the track was the place to be. Canterbury, in the first season, had an average attendance of 13,000, handle over a million. It started off really, really well before some financial difficulties hit. So for folks in my generation that started going to the races there, I mean, it was a great, exciting place to be and a great place to learn about the sport.
I feel out of place here. My home track, I consider that to be Saratoga. Sorry, guys.
Hey, you were born into it, basically, and some of us kind of, and Kurt was kind of born into it, too, his dad being the harness track announcer. I remember well at the Red Mile.
Future Hall of Fame harness track.
Future Hall of Fame.
Yes, harness. Yeah, by the way, congratulations to your dad. We may not have a chance to talk about this on air before, but congrats to him.
That's very kind. Appreciate it, guys.
Yeah.
But, I'm so glad that I've been able to enjoy this sport and be a part of it for the last 20 years or so, actually working in the industry, and 30 years as a fan. It's made a great impact on my life, and I'm so blessed.
Okay, so when you walked over, I showed you my Brist past performances, which are always right in front of me, and I told this story as we were off air. Rich Nilsson, who is a good friend of mine who used to be with Brist, converted me years ago, and I was a staunch Daily Racing Form user, and he said, look, you have to try the Brist PPs, and I said, man, I can't figure them out. There's too many numbers. There's too much in there. He said, no, trust me, sit down, and he went through a tutorial with me, and now I cannot handicap without Brist Past Performance. I cannot use it. I will not bet a horse race without using Brist Past Performances because the information here is so invaluable.
It is, and I think that for me personally, the two huge factors, at least compared with other past performance providers, is the pace figures that we have in our past performances, in particular late pace figures, I think are very crucial in when handicapping turf races. And then, of course, our pedigree information, sire stats, dam statistics, first-time winning percentages. I mean, you just can't beat that kind of information at your fingertips.
Do they have stats on which horses might like the mud here today?
It might not be in your face evident, but if you look close enough, I think you might find some.
Yeah, actually, maybe which horses can swim the best, because we have gotten a ton of water on this racetrack over the past several days.
Yeah, I have never seen anything this prolonged in my days of following racing and stuff, and it's unfortunate too, because this track relies so much and financially and heavily on this particular weekend. And we got here to the track with the news that all the grass racing except for one stakes today is off the turf. So very unfortunate, but we have to make it the best of it that we can.
The Gallarette being the one race that remains on the turf as things stand right now. Oh, okay, Vance, subtlety is not my strong suit, so we heard Mike mention the fact about the mud and the slop here today, the wet conditions. So when I look at this race, when I look at the Preakness, I think back, okay, I'm looking at it as same song, second verse, same as the first verse. We just saw a sloppy track 2 weeks ago. We've got Justify, the winner of the Derby, back. We have got Good Magic, the runner-up, coming back in the Derby. Can we beat either of those horses today?
On paper, I would say no. This is not going to be a very unique opinion, but with Justify drawn in the seven hole, just like he was at Churchill Downs, if he breaks well, and the break is always important, I see this potentially being a rerun of the Derby. I mean, he's going to be sitting off the pace, presumably being set by Sporting Chance. Perhaps somebody else to his inside will, make the pace favorable. But, this horse is so versatile. He could just be pulling Mike and say, hey, I want to go. And it'll be very difficult task for him to be run down.
And we learned in the Kentucky Derby 2 weeks ago that even a hot early pace isn't enough to stop Justify.
Yeah, I mean, that was just an incredible performance considering the half-mile split over that track. And he just kept on going, found another gear, and withstood all challengers in the stretch. So this is a very special racehorse. I saw him get off the van the other day. He was bouncing around. And Baffert has said he's very confident he's going to show up today. So it's a good sign. Point for the odds on favorite.
Kurt and I have both done several radio interviews with our affiliates around the country over the past couple of days, and one of the questions that I received on a couple of different stations, and I thought it was valid, when you have a horse that's such a heavy favorite like Justify, how on earth do you make any money in this race? So as a handicapper, how are you going to try to do it?
I think the main suggestion I would give to people is concentrate on the trifecta. If you think Justify is the likely winner and Good Magic, it will be very hard to beat for second. The thing to do would be to find a horse to run third and bet the trifecta heavily straight up. Now, if you think that Justify is the likely winner, but Good Magic potentially could not finish second, or you think he might get beat in the place spot, then, hit and try and find a horse to, key Justify on top with, hit that exact hard, and that's the way I'm kind of leaning towards.
And as far as long shots in the Preakness, one name that's been popping up is Lone Sailor. One of our colleagues, Tom Leach, who will be part of our broadcast later this afternoon, said that he's been looking real closely at that horse. I think he benefits from a smaller field in the Preakness, not as much traffic for him to deal with. What are your thoughts on Lone Sailor?
Yeah, I agree with you on that perspective because Tom Amos has said so. He thought the traffic conditions during the Derby were disadvantageous to his horse. And if you look back two races back in the Louisiana Derby, I mean, that was a pretty stellar performance. And he had not run quite up to that standard before. And so, I mean, this horse is obviously coming into the Classic season in really good shape. And yeah, I would definitely consider him for the lower rungs of the exotics for sure.
Talking with Vance Hansen of Bristnet.com here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We are live from Pimlico getting set for our coverage of the 143rd middle jewel of the Triple Crown that begins with our undercard coverage 3 Eastern today and then all of our Preakness Stakes coverage at 5 Eastern on the network. Is presented by TwinSpires.com, and our thanks to them for all of their support. Vance, only 6 horses who skipped the Kentucky Derby have won the Preakness since 1980, so we have 4 newcomers in this year's field. Any chance that one of those 4 jumps up and pulls off a bit of an upset here today?
Not necessarily for the win, and I mean, Quip is a very nice horse, won the Tampa Bay Derby, has been very highly thought of. And, you know, once the connections decided to skip the Derby, I mean, they said, you know, regardless of what Justify is, how he's going to run in the Derby, we're definitely running this horse in the Preakness. So they obviously think quite highly of him. I'm not quite sure what the kind of trip he's going to have on the inside. And he is a kind of a fresh horse, having not run since the Arkansas Derby. So he might be showing a little bit more speed, perhaps slightly more than connections might hope he would. And you don't want, obviously, him to get sucked into a fast pace and things of that nature. But, yeah, Quip has got some talent. Steve Asmussen is very high on Tenfold, obviously, and he's a dual Preakness-winning trainer himself. I wasn't overly impressed with some of his his Oaklawn races before the Arkansas Derby weren't particularly fast, but as a son of Curlin, he definitely has an opportunity to improve. So of the newcomers, I think I would concentrate on those two.
Since it has been raining all week and we've had sloppy track conditions both Thursday and again yesterday here at Pimlico, any observations on how the racetrack's been playing this week?
I think on Thursday the rail definitely wasn't quite the place to be. I noticed some jockeys keeping out in the middle of the racetrack a little bit more. Now, yesterday, I thought the track seemed to be playing pretty fair, I think. And we saw a number of horses coming from off the pace, and we saw a horse like Irish War Cry just wire the field in the Pimlico Special. So, yeah, keep an eye on what the track looks like in the early races today. You know, like we said, all the grass races except one is off the turf, so we should have a pretty good idea of how it's playing by Preakness time.
The Preakness is the last race of a $1 million guaranteed pick 5 on the program today. And I have to ask you about the Sir Barton, which is race 12, the race before the Preakness. I don't know if you've had a chance to look real closely at it, but I've got a buddy in St. Louis who is all about Pony Up from the barn of Todd Pletcher. He said, I love this horse. He said, I'm actually picking him as my best bet of the day. What do you think of Pony Up?
Yeah, I think we had to submit some selections for a betting guide a few days ago, and I did place Pony Up as my top selection in the Sir Barton. I was at the Rebel at Oaklawn Park in mid-March, and a friend of mine who was working down there at the time said, hey, watch out for Pony Up in the Jeff Ruby Stakes, and we both bet him pretty heavily that particular day. Just fell a bit short at a nice price for a Todd Pletcher trainee. And then last time out in the, you know, he ran in the Lexington and finished a pretty good third to My Boy Jack. And this is obviously a step down in class off those two races, and connections decided to point for this race instead of the James Murphy, which is off the turf today anyway. But yeah, this looks like a pretty good spot for Pony Up, I think.
All right, Vance, before we let you go, Justify, is he your winner in the Preakness Stakes?
I will
stick with the favorite.
I was a chalk eater at Louisville a couple weeks ago, and I'll be even more of a chalk eater today. Yeah, I'm picking Justify.
Well, Vance, we appreciate you stopping by for a little bit. Thanks for the visit. Nice to meet you, and look forward to hearing your thoughts maybe up the road to a race like the Belmont Stakes in a few weeks.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks,
I had a lot of fun.
All right, Vance Hansen, Bristnet.com with us here on the Equine Forum. We'll get to a break. We'll come back, get you set for a very, very busy second half of the show. Stay with us. It's the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Triple Crown.
Today is the 43rd running of the Grade 1 Preakness Stakes, the second jewel of Thoroughbred Racing's Triple Crown, featuring Kentucky Derby winner Justify. There are eight stakes worth over $2.5 million on this afternoon's card, including the historic Preakness, and three $300,000 guaranteed pools and a $2 million guaranteed late pick four make for some outstanding opportunities to make a life-changing score. Today's first post is 10:30 a.m. For more information, go to pimlico.com.
Power.
Tapazar's going to keep Rail Trip at bay, and Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
It is all Monomoy girls to take the Central Bank Ashland.
Performance.
Midnight Bizu is starting the far outside. It's Wonder Gadot, and on the inside, Monomoy Girl. It's down to these two, and it's going to be Monomoy Girl in the Kentucky Oaks.
Gainesway Stallion Tapazar is Tappet's leading miler, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a 2-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at 3, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4. A top 5 third crop sire, now with more than $5 million in progeny earnings, including Monomoy Girl, a game winner of the Grade 1 $1 million Kentucky Oaks at Churchill Downs. Tapazar, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
As a partner in a thoroughbred, the horse is yours every day, not just race day. Bergen Stables understands. When you join their New York bred partnerships, you not only get the thrill of competition, but you get quality time with your horse and a meaningful voice in decision making. To get involved, visit BergenStables.com. Any partnership can put you close to the action. Bergen Stables brings you close to the horse.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080 or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And Calvin Burrell and Rachel Alexandra giving a bit of a cue, opening up with a quarter to go at Pimlico. Big drama trying to hold on down to second there. Papa Clem is in between horses. Frisian Fire on the far outside laboring along with just about a furlong left to go. Rachel Alexandra, she's got a 3-length lead. Here comes Musket Man. Musket Man charging and Mind That Bird on the far outside. The Derby winner, Mind That Bird, closing a late gap. But it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness. Mind That Bird was second. Musket Man was third. Followed in fourth position there by a Flying Private.
Dave Rodman with the call of that Preakness Stakes. Rachel Alexandra, the last horse not to run in the Kentucky Derby and win the Preakness. Of course, she ran the Kentucky Oaks the day before the Derby, so look at it in terms of that light. But, boy, she was simply sensational here. She defeated Mind That Bird, who put in a tremendous effort here at Old Hilltop, just came up a little bit short. And Rachel Alexandra, one of two Preakness winners, trained by Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, who looks for number three later this afternoon with one of the newcomers, Tenfold. We know he can pull it off, and we'll see if Tenfold can can get the victory and pull off a bit of an upset. But, Kurt, it may not be as much of an upset as people are thinking right now.
Yeah, it sounds like from the early wagering, and keep in mind the wagering began yesterday on the early wagering on the Preakness, Tenfold's been taking a lot of early money. And maybe Steve's past performances in this race has encouraged some folks. And, you know, the Tenfold's a horse that's only made three career starts, but he's well-bred, he's got a Hall of Fame trainer, and he is taking some money.
Yeah, and we told you earlier that Bob Baffert, you know, sends out Justify, who breaks from post seven, and two of his six Preakness winners have come from post position number seven. Well, Tenfold breaks from post position number six, and in Preakness history, that's a pretty good one, too, because post six is the post that has produced the most Preakness winners with 16. So Tenfold has that going for him.
Yeah, there have been so many that have come out of there. And, you know, Tenfold's a lightly raced colt. He's only made three career starts. Tested Stakes Company for the first time in the Arkansas Derby. And folks will look at that and say, well, yeah, he was fifth, ho-hum. But, you know, that was his first time to race in the stakes. And really, you could have thrown a blanket over most of those horses from second through fifth. Nobody was going to beat Magnum Moon on that day. It just wasn't going to happen.
No, just not going to happen. Just simply tremendous that afternoon. All right, quick reminder before we get you to the second half of the show, which features Hall of Fame jockey Edgar Prado in just a couple of minutes. It features trainer John Service talking about local horse Diamond King in today's Preakness, and it features that interview about 15 minutes long, my sit-down interview with Hall of Famers Bob Baffert and Wayne Lucas. Had a chance to sit down with the two of them together the other day. Trust me, you won't want to miss that interview. Stay with us. It comes up at 9:40 Eastern Time. Quick mention for our friends over at Fasig Tipton. The Mid-Atlantic 2-year-old in training sale comes up on Monday and Tuesday this week. That's right next door to Pimlico. And you can head over there and check out all the outstanding 2-year-olds in training. Kurt, the sale now scheduled to start at 2 o'clock each day, Monday and Tuesday. They have a third breeze show that was postponed because of the weather here. That is going to take place tomorrow, and still awaiting a start time for that, but that will take place tomorrow, and then the sale Monday, Tuesday.
And that's one of the great stories about this year's Preakness, because Diamond King came out of that sale a year ago. And, you know, that's a sale that takes place just up the road from here. We're just about 10 miles or so from where the sale will take place at Timonium at the Maryland State Fairgrounds. But, yeah, here's Diamond King, comes out of that sale a year ago almost to the day. Here he is now getting ready to run in the Preakness.
Yeah, and by the way, a little plug here for our friends over at Gainesway. Tapazar, the sire of Kentucky Oaks winner Monomoy Girl, he also has some 2-year-olds going in that sale. So make sure you take a look at those Tapazars, because they can really, really run. And there are some late-season deals available to Tapazar at Gainesway. Just give them a call today. Michael Hernan will take care of you. I promise you that. And, of course, Monomoy Girl now pointing for the Grade 1 Acorn, as is Midnight Bisou. So that should be a great showdown if those two end up hooking up in the Acorn.
Yeah, they went off as the top two choices in the Kentucky Oaks. Midnight Bisou was the post-time favorite. Had a pretty tough trip and ended up still running third in a big, big effort. And Monomoy Girl was ridden so aggressively by Floron Giroux to that victory. Very impressive win for her in the Oaks.
All right, a Hall of Fame second half of the program coming up. Edgar Prado, John Service, Bob Baffert, Dwayne Lucas, all ahead. We're back with Hour 2 right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Audible by three. Hoffberg can't get him. Mississippi is third. Five Florida Derbies for Todd Pletcher. Audible, no doubt about it. He won it by 2.5.
But it's a game of name the margin. This Mendelssohn is going to absolutely demolish them. And this thing's going to go to Kentucky and win by nearly 50 metres, I reckon.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Good Magic has been defeated, then Machismo. Less than a 16th to go. The leader is still Promises Fulfilled, and Promises Fulfilled will spring the upset to win the Fountain of Youth under Irad Ortiz Jr.
Bolt Doro is forging clear. This is a high-caliber colt. We're witnessing the emergence of a star as Bolt Doro treats his rivals to a comprehensive walloping in the front runner.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, the voice of Keeneland Racecourse in Lexington, Kentucky. He's Kurt Becker. He's sitting in for the Pontiff of the Pick Four this morning as we come to you live from a rain-soaked Pimlico Racecourse here in Baltimore, and that figures to be the case throughout much of the afternoon, the rain continuing to fall. It has done so over the past 3 or 4 days and really has been relentless, and expecting more showers and even heavy at times as we move throughout the afternoon leading up to the Preakness at 6:45 Eastern. So if you are just tuning in, expect a sloppy track when you're handicapping that race later today. Kurt, the scratches and changes are out. There are no changes to the Preakness field. All 8 contenders set to go. There were several to the race preceding the Preakness, which we'll have as part of our coverage later today. The Sir Barton, and folks can head over to Equibase.com or any of the ADWs, Twin Spires, Express Bet, and get all the scratches there.
This year, the 143rd running of the Preakness, and anytime you talk about a race that's been around for nearly 150 years, there's always a lot of history to talk about when we come to Pimlico during this week. You threw out a name as we were coming into the track this morning, Mike, that I hadn't heard mentioned in a while. The late Shelby Whitfield.
Yeah.
What a fantastic name in the history of broadcasting. He was, for a brief time, the voice of the Washington Senators, and he covered this Preakness Stakes for many years. He worked for Associated Press Radio, also for ABC Sports Radio. Someone else earlier this week mentioned Dick Woolley, who for many years was the track announcer at Pimlico and at Laurel, was an Eclipse Award winner. He used to host a really good show on WBAL here in Baltimore that focused on the thoroughbred industry, won an Eclipse Award for it in the late 1970s. So it's been fun to reminisce and hear some of those names mentioned throughout the course of the week.
Yeah, we are efforting jockey Edgar Prado here at the moment and hoping to be joined by him in just a couple of minutes. Obviously a busy day for him as he gets ready for this Preakness Stakes card. He's not riding in the Preakness, but he does have other mounts later in the afternoon. Another name that comes to mind when you think about Pimlico and Maryland racing is Gaudette. And we had a chance to welcome in Gabby Gaudette as part of our broadcast team at Churchill Downs a couple of weeks ago. She is here in Maryland working at Pimlico and for the racetrack, doing some TV handicapping hits and interviews for them throughout the week, and she'll probably be doing that throughout the afternoon here. But Gaudette, a name that is hard to forget when you think about Maryland racing.
It really is, and regrettably, earlier this year, Gabby's father, Eddie Gaudette, passed away, and he had been a fixture in Maryland racing, trained a winner of the Black-Eyed Susan Stakes, had a starter just a few years ago in the Preakness, a concealed identity perhaps, if that rings a bell.
That does sound right.
I think
yeah.
He ran the same year. I think that was the Shackleford Animal Kingdom year perhaps when he ran. But Eddie Gaudette won, what, close to 2,000 races in his career. But beyond that, he was well-liked, always seemed to be in a good mood, a guy that people enjoyed visiting with. He dearly loved Maryland racing and very much is missed, passed away in January. So thinking of the Gaudette family as we join here for Preakness Week.
Yeah, he's Kurt Becker. I'm Mike Penna. And again, awaiting Edgar Prado. We hope to be able to get a hold of him. He's going to join us by phone on this Preakness morning. We'll have a chance to catch up with the Hall of Famer who just recorded milestone win number 7,000 in that brilliant career. Kurt, that puts him 8th all-time among riders in terms of number of wins. He's actually 7th all-time in earnings with more than $266 million to his credit. 57 wins behind Angel Cordero for the 7th spot. You think the Hall of Famer gets him?
Oh, man. I think he will. And when you look at that list of the jockeys that have won 7,000 races or more, Russell Bayes, Lafitte Penkai Jr., the great Bill Shoemaker, Pat Day, David Gall, a blue-collar journeyman jock who rode a lot in the yeah. Midwest, racked up a ton of wins, Chris McCarron, you mentioned Angel Cordero, and now Edgar Prado, part of that exclusive company.
Interesting. With as much success as Edgar has had racing in Maryland, and let's face it, he has dominated racing in the state of Maryland, at least at one point he did.
Right.
He has never won the Preakness Stakes. He's won 2 runnings of the Belmont with Sarava in 2002, Birdstone, who denied Smarty Jones the Triple Crown in 2004, and he's won the Kentucky Derby with Barbaro. The one element of the Triple Crown that he has not been able to capture yet. The one race is the Preakness, and that's somewhat surprising considering all the success that he's had here.
Yeah, he racked up something like two dozen titles on the Maryland circuit back in the 1990s between Pimlico and Laurel. And he's darn good at spoiling Triple Crowns for other folks. You know, you mentioned Sarava, that 70-1 upset of the Belmont the year that War Emblem was going for a Triple Crown. And Smarty Jones, the year Smarty Jones went for it, Edgar had the mount on the horse that ended up winning that year, Birdstone.
Yeah. Well, Edgar is with us now. And Edgar, we know it's a very busy morning for you, so we appreciate you taking a little time. First of all, congratulations, my friend. 7,000 career victories. What an accomplishment.
Well, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk to the audience. It's really I'm very thankful for reaching the milestone. I couldn't done without the help of God, my family, and the beautiful people that stood behind me for many years. And of course, the losses that it took my passion for the game.
Edgar, take me back to that race a couple of days ago at Parks when you finally were able to record that 7,000th victory. What was that moment like when you finally crossed that finish line and you knew you had it?
Well, that was a goal that I have in mind, you know, before I retire, you know. And doing it in party was great because I thought my brother's there and he's helping me out. And it was nice to spend a moment with my brother and the rest of the family. You know, another thing, it could have been nice to win in Laurel because Pimlico has been great to me for so many years. But, you know, in this business, you have to think when you can, you know. You cannot just wait for the next opportunity. It was great, you know. It's delighted to be in this small group of jockeys that they've been done it to reach 7,000 wins in the whole career.
Edgar, you're a native of Peru, and you came to South Florida in 1986 to begin the United States portion of your Hall of Fame career. When you first came to the States, were you intimidated at all? Was there ever a point where you said, man, I want to go back home? Or were you able to adjust pretty quickly to life here in the U.S.?
Well, it was tough at the beginning because I was living right in Peru, living apprentice. And now it's doing great, and I have my family there. I was only 17 when I came to this country, and I didn't know how to speak English. I don't have a car. I don't have a place to stay. It was rough, but I think all the hard work pay off at the end. It was a moment that I thought about it to come back to Peru, but I said, if a lot of people come to this country, sacrificing their life and putting their life in danger, crossing the border, and they don't make it, why should I go back when I'm here already? Yeah, I plan to continue to work hard and see, go day by day and just wait for the opportunity. And when the opportunity comes, I took the best out of that and made the best out of that. And I thank you, the people that give me that chance.
You know, Edgar, you've mentioned the people that have given you this opportunity on a couple of different occasions already, and nobody, no matter how good they are in the world of sports, gets to these lofty levels without the help of other people at some point in their career. And you mentioned wanting to potentially go back home at one point early on. Talk about some of the people that you're never going to forget that really helped Edgar Prado become the rider that he is today.
Well, and the list is pretty long, you know. And in this game, it's we. It's not me. It's we. It's a team together from the bottom to the top. And there's so many people like Manny Aspurua, you know, good chance when I come here. John Castro, my agent at the moment, Robert Casares, he was the one that took me to Shuffle Downs. And I was riding for him first call. Then he took me back to Maryland. And in Maryland, I did real well, you know. Then I started riding for Vinny Blaine, then Capuano, Morphy. All those people, they've been great to me. And then when I moved to New York, it was Richard Dottrell. I rode for him for 10 years, almost all his horses. Bobby Franco, Fletcher, people like them, and they always been behind me for so many years. The late Carlisa, flying C Stable, I was his rider, number one rider to go. And things like that, so many people that I'm, if I keep mentioning, we will never finish this conversation.
Well, Edgar, there's a lot of talk today about Justify in the Preakness for obvious reasons, winning the Derby, odds-on morning line favorite. Of course, his sire is Scat Daddy, and of course, Scat Daddy, regrettably, is no longer with us. But if memory serves, I believe you won the Florida Derby on Scat Daddy. I'm curious what you might remember about the sire of Justify.
Well, I wrote him, you're absolutely right. I wrote him in the Florida Derby. I won the race. He was very gutsy horse, you know. He always gave it his best, tried real hard. And unfortunately, in the Kentucky Derby, he was bounced around and he didn't perform the way we thought that he will. But he was a nice horse when I rode him. And you can see Testify is just another horse, you know, with a lot of class and potential.
Edgar, outside of a horse like Scat Daddy, and you've been aboard so many horses that have been so good in your Hall of Fame career, are there one or two that, for whatever reason, will always stand out to you more than the others?
Yeah, I think every horse has its own talent, you know, and its own territory, because you cannot compare a horse that goes alone to a sprinter or a horse that runs in the dirt on the turf. So there's so many good horses that I rode, thank God, you know, and the turf and the dirt. But one that really stands out is Barbaro, because he could have run anywhere.
Yeah, he could have run anywhere, and he was so brilliant and sensational. And I know that was a moment with everything that happened after the Preakness, Edgar, that was very difficult on you, and that was probably one of those moments in your career where you really had to fight through a lot of adversity, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
Yes, it was difficult in my career, but at the same time, it was difficult in my lifestyle, in my life, personal life, because the year I lost my mother, you know, she was battled with cancer. So it was very roller coaster year, you know. But sometimes, you know, God put you those obstacles to see if you can overcome and move forward.
He's Hall of Fame jockey Edgar Prado, now a winner of 7,000 career races. Edgar, real quick before we let you go, we're standing here above the finish line at Pimlico looking down on this racetrack, which is just loaded with water. It's extremely sloppy. When this track gets wet like this, tell me about how it changes from when it's a dry track and what some of the riders will have to keep in mind later this afternoon in the Preakness.
Well, unfortunately, the Preakness is only 8-horse field, you know. It won't be much traffic. It's mile and 316, so it's not like they have to come running out of there to get position. So I think it's going to be a more tactical race. You know? And after the gates open, the first couple of jumps, you will see if you have a horse underneath or not, when you see the horse is handling the trap properly. It's most of these races like this is up to the horses, you know. If the horse handling, you will have a chance to win.
All right, there he is. He's the Hall of Famer. Edgar, by the way, just for the record, you are only 5,842 wins behind Russell Bayes. Can we catch him?
Absolutely. I'm working on it.
He's the best. We appreciate the time, Russell. Thanks for Edgar, we appreciate the time, buddy. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
One of the classiest riders in the game today, no doubt about it. Truly good guy. And yeah, he's going to get to work. Let's see if he can catch Russell Bayes. Long way to go.
Well, you know, Edgar mentioned the fact that he had been riding at Suffolk when his agent told him, we're going to go to Maryland. That was back in the early 1990s. And the story goes, his agent at the time told the story that he said, I've got good news for you. He said, I know that you feel like that the stewards don't appreciate your race riding at Suffolk, so we're going to go someplace else. Edgar said, where are we going? He said, we're going to Maryland. And Edgar said, okay, great. Now, which country is that?
Yeah, but to think of everything that Russell has been Russell. There I go.
There
again.
You go.
See, now I have Russell Bayes. Let's get Russell Bayes on the phone, Sean. Let's see if we can get Russell on for an interview, because obviously that's what I'm thinking about right now. Yeah, Edgar, what everything he's accomplished, and he's always been very, very nice to me since the day I started here doing the radio stuff. He's always been very accommodating, and congrats to Edgar Prado on everything he's accomplished. Hey, don't miss any of the coverage of the Preakness and other races around the country like only Blood Horse can bring you. Follow the races and news throughout the day on the popular Blood Horse Daily app, or have an email sent to you once a day. Both are free. Go to bloodhorse.com/daily to learn more. We're back to visit with John Service. That's next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by farmpaint.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you, with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
The fifth running of the Grade II $500,000 Penn Mile is set for Saturday, June 2nd at Hollywood Casino at Penn National, featuring many of the best three-year-old turf horses in the country on an afternoon that includes an all-stakes, all-turf late pick four and a special post time of 3:45 p.m. Eastern. Nominations close Wednesday, May 23rd. Call 717-469-3235 to nominate today. It's the Grade II $500,000 Penn Mile, Saturday, June 2nd at Hollywood Casino at Penn National.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizu with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
So Diamond King, Noble Commander head-to-head after 6-1, 13.27 as they swing in. American Lincoln on the outside, still having fun, driven, trying to kick down toward the inside. But here is Diamond King and Noble Commander to square off the final furlong. Diamond King, Noble Commander. Diamond King's in front now and moves away. Holland Park's running a big one. Here comes Holland Park with a burst of energy on the outside. Diamond King, Holland Park runs to second. Diamond King from Holland Park, Noble Commander. Then American Lincoln and Takedown, followed by Still Having Fun, VIP Code, and Not Fake News, and Dynamic Asset in the Express Bet Federico Tessio Stakes.
Dave Rodman with the call. The Federico Tessio run at Laurel back on April 21st. Diamond King getting the victory that day. Stalking Trip won by 3/4 of a length, and by virtue of that victory, that was a win and you're in for the Preakness Stakes. So he is here, and some people thinking maybe one of the horses to keep an eye on as he continues to improve for trainer John Service, who is going to be with us here in just a couple of minutes. He'll join us from his barn by phone, and like all of our guests who appear on the program, John is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion and wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. Diamond King, not only the horse that figures to take some local money because of his local connections, and of course he is based here in this area, Kurt, he's going to look to pull off a bit of an upset on a couple of fronts, because I mentioned this when Vance was joining us. Only 6 horses have won the Preakness since 1980 after skipping the Kentucky Derby or not running in the race for whatever reason. Diamond King did not run in that race. He's one of 4 newcomers to the Triple Crown Trail among the 8 horse field later today.
Yeah, he is. You've got Diamond King, who did not run in the Kentucky Derby. Quip, who breaks from post 1 today. You also have Tenfold. And those are the 3 that come into that. Sporting Chance. Sporting Chance. You know, the thing is, of those 4, Quip, keep in mind, was a horse who had the points. He had more than enough to go into the gate for the Derby. He had 90 points he racked up on the Kentucky Derby trail, but the connections decided to bypass that race. So Quip will come in on 5 weeks of rest. And it'll be a 4-week rest up for Diamond King coming into the Preakness today.
Well, John Service knows a thing or two about winning the Preakness Stakes. As a matter of fact, he is one of 2 trainers in the race, along with Chad Brown, to be undefeated when he saddles a horse in the Preakness. He's a perfect 1-for-1, that coming with Smarty Jones. And he's with us now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, appreciate the visit.
My pleasure. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Happy to have you on board, and I know it's a busy morning for you, so we won't keep you long, but a little different scenario this time around. Last time it was Smarty Jones coming in after winning the Kentucky Derby, a lot of hype, the Smarty parties taking place all over the country, and now we bring in a local horse in Diamond King, who is a long shot in this race. How much different is it this time around?
Well, not quite as much hype in the Tessio as the Kentucky Derby, but it's big difference. Big difference. You know, we attracted a lot of attention when we came with Smarty in 2004, and we're getting some attention this year, but not much. And it's actually been very enjoyable. Mr. Zachney and the whole team are here, and everybody's having a good time, and we're looking forward to the race.
All right, let me throw this one out at you. What's the key to Diamond King being able to pull off a shocker later here this afternoon?
That's a good question. You know, he's going to have everything go his way. He's going to have to run the best race of his career, and everybody else is going to have to run the worst race of their career.
John, that's not asking too much, John.
Listen, it's an opportunity for the ownership to get to the Preakness again, and you know, we have a very nice horse, and he's up against it. He's in against some tough horses, but he's doing very well, and hopefully he'll run well and come back good.
And you heard John mention the ownership, of course, Cassius King. The principal owner of Diamond King won this race with a Fleet Alex back in 2005, the year after you had won the Preakness with Smarty Jones. And, you know, John, when we look back at Diamond King's last start, which was April 21st at Laurel in the Tessio, first time around 2 turns, and I don't think based on his breeding that was really even a concern, but the thing that stood out about watching that race, it seemed like he showed the ability to rate. You know, that was one of my question marks about this colt. It seemed like in his sprint races, he was so much kind of up on the bit, up on the muscle. Were you pleased to see how he was able to relax around 2 turns?
Very much so. We had worked really hard on trying to implement that strategy with him, and he came along. I mean, he matured. He, you know, we worked him several times sitting off of horses, teaching him to settle, and he did it beautifully in the Tessio.
John, how about this racetrack here today? We've talked about it over the past hour and a half or so since we've been on the air this morning, and just the conditions not ideal. Everybody would love to have 75 degrees and sunny and a fast main track, but you look at this racetrack now and sloppy and sealed. Any concerns there, or how does that play into things for you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody's run over the racetrack that they're going to get today. I mean, I know the Derby was in the mud, but this track today is just there's got to be 2 inches of water laying on top of the racetrack. I saw the guys down there filling washouts early this morning, so I'm sure everybody in the field's going to stay probably out in the 3-4 hole throughout the whole race, and you're going to probably get a horse that's going to relish it and run really well on it, and some that don't.
Yeah, it's a good point you bring up, John. No two sloppy tracks are exactly alike, and the sloppy track we saw at Churchill 2 weeks ago, as you just alluded to, much different than the track here at Pimlico this afternoon. What's the main difference between the Churchill surface and the Pimlico surface when they get this kind of moisture on it?
Well, when you get this much rain for so many, continuous days and hard rain, the racetrack sealed, which is, they just tighten it down so hopefully the water will roll off. But unfortunately, we've had so much water that now it's just laying on the top. So the horses are going to go right through the water, right to that sealed part, which is going to be hard as a rock, and it's going to be like running on a road. I mean, it's literally going to be, a hard racetrack, but there's going to be a lot of kickback, a lot of splashing, water flying everywhere, and some horses, aren't going to know how to handle it. And it could be a little slick.
Well, John, when you mentioned that, as you describe how things could unfold with the kickback and the mud and getting all that mud in a horse's face and never knowing how they might react, with this colt, with Diamond King, his race as a 2-year-old in the Heft Stakes, I thought he showed that he could at least handle some adversity. Now, granted, that was a fast track, but adversity in the form of there were two or three times in the last two furlongs where it looked like horses were going to run right past him. I thought he was beat that day. I thought he was beat twice in the home stretch that day. This is a pretty gutsy horse, isn't he?
He's very gutsy, and he's very talented. The one thing about him that concerns me a little bit is he has a tendency to get to the lead and pull himself up. So I think, strategy-wise, we're probably going to be better off sitting behind some horses and getting all the kickback. I think he'll be able to handle that. And hopefully he'll have something left to make a run at the end.
He's trainer John Service, Diamond King, the local horse looking to pull off an upset later this afternoon in the Preakness. You'll hear our coverage beginning 3 Eastern with the undercard and exclusive coverage of the Preakness right here on Horse Racing Radio Network at 5 o'clock, all presented by TwinSpires.com. John, as always, we appreciate the visit. I know it's a busy morning. We'll let you go. All the best with Diamond King this afternoon, and go get it done.
Thank you very much, guys. Appreciate the time.
All right, John Service, Diamond King, again, 30-1 on the morning line, has his work cut out for him. And as John said, the key will be him running his best race of his career, everybody else running their worst.
and that's true. And, when he talked about how this colt sometimes can get the lead and then maybe he wants to loaf a little bit, horses will do that. You remember when Street Sense lost to Curlin in the Preakness and there were critics that said, oh, Calvin Burrell made his move too soon? You go back and watch, he didn't make his move too soon. That was a case that day where I think Street Sense, right before the wire, he had the lead and kind of went through one of those moments where a horse will do that and think, okay, what do I do now?
Yep, no, absolutely. All right, so our thanks to John Service and to Edgar Prado in those past couple of segments. Coming up, you're going to hear from Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas. They took the time to visit with me earlier this week. You won't want to miss it. Stay with me. It's about 4 minutes away. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Triple Crown.
Baffert Justify winning the Kentucky Derby. Make plans to be here at Santa Anita for the middle jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes. This Saturday, we'll have our annual Michelada Rumble in the infield and the 2-day Preakness Betting Challenge. Go to SantaAnita.com and get signed up now. Admission gates open early on Preakness Day at 7:15, and first live race post time is at 12 noon. We'll offer a $500,000 guaranteed late pick 4, as well as a revised wagering menu that includes $2 win, place, and show parlay wagers, 50-cent trifectas, and more. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Castleton Lions is home to Blue Blood sprinter Justin Phillip and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti.
Justin Phillip was North America's number one ranked second crop sire by earnings in January of 2018. Represented this year by exciting stakes place three-year-olds Upset Brewing and Blushing Justine, along with Riano Tesoro. Now 3-for-4 lifetime after taking the 36 million yen Crocus Stakes at Tokyo Racecourse on January 27th. Justin Phillip is also the sire of What a Catch, winner of last year's Rockville Center Stakes at 2. Seven-time Grade 1 winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance. The sire of Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong
has won.
Canadian Classic hero Sir Dudley Diggs.
Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
And marathon specialist Runtime.
But Runtime, motors on the outside.
Justin Phillip and Gio Ponti standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
This is Tom Leach for Kentucky Bank's Wealth Management Department. Investing in today's world requires advice that is timely and responsive to your investment needs and objectives. At Kentucky Bank, we strive to provide you with our full range of investment services with the highest degree of service and to deliver it in a personalized and effective fashion. For a no-obligation review, call Clark Nyberg at 859-988-1318. That's Clark Nyberg, 859-988-1318. Call Kentucky Bank and call it home. I do.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Bernardini in the Preakness to win Going Away by 5.
Darley stallion Bernardini continued to display his brilliance with a dominant win in the 2006 Preakness Stakes. In the past week, his 4-year-old son, Westwood, won the Run Happy Stakes at Belmont, getting a 99 buyer. His 4-year-old daughter, Burned, won the Serena Song Stakes at Monmouth with an 88 buyer, and his 3-year-old daughter, Pray for Leslie, scored in her debut by 6 lengths at Churchill Downs, all making Bernardini and his exciting progeny your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Darley stallion Bernardini is the sire of 18 Greatest Stakes winners on dirt over the past 3 years. Only the great Tappet has more. Learn more about Bernardini and all the Darley stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Unbridled Stone, Cavalier on the inside, up the middle of the track, Rhinestone is closing stoutly. It's Cavalier on the inside, it's Rhinestone on the outside, McCarron and Bailey, here's the finish. Too tight to fall. Was it Cavalier on the inside? Was it Bailey with Rhinestone on the outside? Noses apart after a mile and a quarter in the Kentucky Derby.
Back on the Equine Forum, Mike Penna, Kurt Becker, happy to have you with us at rainy Pimlico on this Preakness Stakes Day. That was Dave Johnson with the call of the 1996 Kentucky Derby. Grindstone for trainer Dwayne Lucas. Cavalier from the barn of Bob Baffert, hitting the line virtually together, but it was the nose of Grindstone that would get the victory that day. And that is just one of the instances where Bob and Wayne are tied together in the lore and history of thoroughbred racing. And earlier I did have the chance to sit down and talk with the two Hall of Famers and talk to them about 6 Preakness victories, which they both have, and talk to them about some of the other moments that they've been part of together. And here's that interview. Hope you enjoy. Combined Hall of Fame trainers Dwayne Lucas and Bob Baffert have saddled a total of 27 Triple Crown race winners.
27.
See, they're not fit to do the interview.
That means that we're really old.
14, 13, yeah. Right?
Yeah, that's right. I was counting the one Saturday.
You're still one up, by the way.
Yeah, I was counting his on Saturday.
Oh, he's already giving it away.
He's jinxing me. He's trying to jinx me. I know what he's doing. He's working me. It's a quarter horse thing, you know. They try to get in your head. So you'll just, you know, you'll just take it easy and you'll just, that's one thing we bring from the quarter horses. It's mind games, you know. And so a lot of these thoroughbred guys are just not used to it, you know. But it worked in the quarter horses game.
For sure. I used to always, when they would get a young guy, you know, that was going to ride his first Kentucky Derby. I used to always, if he was out there in the morning, I'd go over and I'd put my arm around him. I'd say, look, it's just another race. Don't worry about it. You'll look down there, it'll be Jerry Bailey, Gary Stevens, Pat Day. I said, these Hall of Famers, but don't let them intimidate you. Just relax, exhale. Their eyes get about that big around, you know.
No, you can tell, you know, like the younger guys when they come out and ride those big on those big days, and they have a look on them like a deer staring at the headlight. I mean, you can tell it affects a lot of them.
There's no gamesmanship on your part, is there, Coach?
Well, I have a lot of fun with this guy, and we enjoy it and try to make it a little bit lighter. I don't joke around too much with some of the other guys that we don't, you know, being my age, I don't know them all, but it's fun to, the camaraderie here at the Preakness is second to none. And I think it's because we're all sharing the same locker room. We're all in the same barn, so we interact every day. At the Derby, they got us scattered all over, and then the Belmont even more so. So once we're out there and we get a chance to interact and talk and share a cup of coffee in the morning, that makes it pretty special.
Let me ask you this question. As a former basketball coach, after the Kentucky Derby, Bob described Justify as being like LeBron James. And he said, when you have LeBron James on your team, you better win a championship. How do you game plan to defeat LeBron James on Saturday?
Well, I got Stephen Curry. I'll have to go with Stephen Curry and a couple of these other guys on the Warriors. But I don't think in this race, in an eight-horse field, I think a dominant horse has a better chance. I think if you're going to beat a dominant horse, and Justify is definitely a dominant horse, you have to have maybe a 14-horse field and hope for some traffic problems, something bumping, get away, a stumble. Because if he's dominant and he only has to beat a few horses, and he makes his own luck, that's it. I say there's seven others in the race. He'll be in front of five or six of them, so he's only going to have to deal with a couple of them. And that makes him very, very tough to beat.
You've been here before, Bob. You agree?
Well, I agree to the fact that, you know, if he breaks well, I mean, he still has to break well. I mean, we've seen what can go wrong in a horse race. There's so many things, and so I never take anything for granted. Mike Smith doesn't either, and so we're a target, we're the hunted. I mean, pace makes the race, so the pace is going to be, you know, so important that first quarter of a mile, just like in the Derby. I just really, when, you know, I was, when I saw 22-1, I was, you know, basically trying to figure out my escape route to leave the Churchill down so I could get in my car and beat the traffic out, you know, and then 45-4, I'm like, oh man, this is just killing me. But, you know, he just kept on going, and, you know, Wayne, he's trained those kind of horses. He knows those kind of horses. They're horses that are just, they have speed and they have more speed. They're just brilliant racehorses. We've been so fortunate to have trained so many horses like that. But it's still, you know, you still have to get around there. And he definitely, you know, coming into this race, he looks really good. I took him out there today, just went easy with him, but he's handled everything we've thrown at him. I mean, we threw a lot at him. And so I haven't really had a chance to, you know, I can't take credit. Well, I planned this from last year. He didn't. There was no planning. He was never even mentioned. If you would ask me in January, what do you think of Justify? And I would have said, he's at Los Alamitos, you know, and I brought him over. And, but, you know, my assistant there, Mike Marlowe, who worked for Wayne Lucas for many years, and he's the one that talked me into hiring him. He just does tremendous job for me, and he'll tell you. He says, "Man, this guy's special. I think he's really, really special."
When you hear the words Bob Baffert, five-time Kentucky Derby winning trainer, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind?
That means I was pretty lucky to, you know, come across those kind of horses. I mean, you have to come across. I mean, there's a lot of really good trainers out there that never had a chance to win the Derby and to go at it, but I think a lot of it comes from our background with Wayne. You know, we started with quarter horses. We had to, you know, the horsemanship involved in quarter horses to get them, you know, to point them to a race, run on a Saturday, and then we come back the following Saturday and want them to run even faster, you know, you just got to qualify. You're talking, you know, out of 500-800 horses, and then they're going to pick 10. You're one of the – now you got to come back and do it again. So I think we – that's why the two-week turnaround, that's like a lifetime where we came from.
Yeah, we think that's a luxury, for sure.
Do you agree with that, Wayne?
The horsemanship. I even made that statement when I first came over from the court. But we, starting from the background that we both had, we didn't have a lot of big money behind us. We had to select horses that looked like athletes and make do them. When you're spending your own money or you don't have a lot of money and you're in that game, we both didn't start out with big, you know, money people behind us. You really start paying attention to conformation and what'll work and what won't work in your training methods and everything, and I think that's invaluable.
You know, I think it's interesting that when you think about the careers of Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas, you're intertwined in a lot of ways because of what you've accomplished in this sport. But you're also intertwined because of one day in 1996 at Churchill Downs in that Kentucky Derby, Cavenier, Grindstone. They end up noses apart. How often do you bounce back and forth about that, or have you talked about that over the years?
We don't talk about it much, but we're very aware of it. I was the lucky one that day. I think Jerry Bailey put on a beautiful ride. I think if they ran those two horses five times, you'd have maybe four different outcomes, you know, as far as the closeness and everything. It was one of those deals where Grindstone was way out on the racetrack, Cavenier was on the rail, and had they been head and head or close in the one and two or three and four hole, it probably would have turned around. I wasn't worried about him. I told everybody when he came over from Santa Anita, I said, We're going to have to buckle down here. He's going to be very successful. I watched him at the quarter horses. We came from that background, and I was very confident that I didn't know it would get to this level. I didn't know we'd both be having six Preakness winners, and he'd have five Derbies, but I thought we'd damn sure be okay. I wasn't worried about it.
I'll never forget. We were I'd won three Derbies, and we were invited to the ESPYs. And it was a great deal. They come, they pick you up. It's after War Emblem had won. And so they're going to pick you up, and we're going to take you there, and we sit down. So Jill and I were all excited about that. So we get there, and we're like probably 20, 30 rows up, you know, from the stage. And I look down there, and about five rows in front, Wayne Lucas is sitting there. I go, wow. He said, "You're in the fifth row. They got me back there in row 30. He says, and he says, I'll never forget, he says, "That's the difference between winning four Derbies and three Derbies." I'll never forget that.
I didn't know that line, but that's great.
But it was like, damn, you know, he's right, you know. So I go, but you know what? We've had a lot of fun with it. I remember the Grindstone. That was the toughest defeat. And the reason I say tough, I was just hoping to light the board. It was my first time there. And Unbridled Song, he was the horse. I mean, he was, and he had the foot issues, and he was stable next to me. It was just a circus over there. I'd never seen anything like it. And so all of a sudden, he's got the lead, and all of a sudden, he quits about the eighth pole. And then Cavenier inherits the lead. And I was like, wow, I can't believe I'm in the lead in the Kentucky Derby. And please, where's the finish line? I'm like, and the finish line, I hate the Churchill finish line, way, way down there. And I've got bad seats. You know, I came, they had me, I was at the 16th pole. So, and I'm watching, and there's not a television set in front of me. And I look over, and I'm looking around, I see this horse coming down, and he's got a white bridle. I go, oh, my God, it's like a white bridle. You know, so, and he's coming down, and he's coming, but he's way on the outside. And they hit the wire, and I thought I won. And I'll never forget, I just felt this feeling like, oh, I just want to jump out of my skin, like I won the Kentucky Derby, and this and that. I'm looking around, and I'm looking around at everybody, like, I think we held on, and then you start asking strangers, what do you think? You know, like, you got it, Bob, you got it, you know? And then all of a sudden, the owner, Cavenier, she turns to me, and she puts up, we got second. like, how would she know? You know, it's far away, so I'll never – I just stood there in my box, and I got to thinking, maybe he got beat. And they kept showing the replay, and you really couldn't tell.
No.
And then I was watching – the trying to watch the body language of Chris McCarron and Jerry Bailey. And Chris McCarron, he didn't seem like he was like – you know, he wasn't – and Jerry seemed like he was – like smiling, like his body language was pretty good. And I go, man, this is not good. And at the time, I didn't know my sister-in-law was running, screaming down in front of him.
Yeah,
telling him, like, we got it. Just smoke. So he's thinking, well, I guess they must be down there or whatever. But
I couldn't see the tote board. I was in the tunnel, in, you know, or the walkway behind the box seats, and here they come banging and screaming, and I thought, oh Christ, the number's up. And I get down there is no number up yet.
But it was like, and then when they finally put the number, it was forever. It was like, well, they asked me, what do you think? I said, you know what, I know what it feels like to win the Kentucky Derby. I just felt that. And that's what it's all about. What's it feel like to win a gold medal? Or and I really felt for about 4 minutes that I'd won the Kentucky Derby until they put the number up. So then, but then that night it hit me, and I thought, wow, I will never get another chance. That's it. I blew my chance. And I'm thinking, that freaking Wayne Lucas, that son of a gun. You know, that's it. I'm pulling it mildly, okay? He came through. How does he do it? He just, you know, race after race. And so, but it was really – it was an experience. It was a humbling experience. But yet I was lucky to, you know, even to run second. And then to come back and with a silver charm, and when he got the lead, I see a horse coming. And I'm thinking, please, Lord, you can't do this to me again. I can't take it. You know, I'm thinking, is it Greg Norman in the Masters? I'm thinking, I'm going to start calling me Greg Norman. And he held on. It was like, for a year that I held that, you know, it just went away. And it was just, I mean, so, you know, I think the Lord works in mysterious ways. I think, you know, he's put me through. I think when I had the heart attack, he wasn't done with me yet. I want you to suffer a little bit more. And then to come back and finally, you know, get a triple crown after going through it, you know, three times before. But you know what? You have to count your blessing. But the reason I'm here today and he's here today is because we don't let up. We don't rest on our laurels. You have to. In this game, you have. And for him, 82. I mean, that. And he's still, he's sharp. He knows, you know, he sees my horse. He know. He watches everything. Mm-hmm. He knows everything what's going on. And so I hope at 82, I can get on a horse and ride him around and do all this. Because
if he goes till 82,
I don't think I can make 82 anyway.
There'll be the records will be stacked up so deep that all these poor son of a guns that want to be a horse trainer will give it up and start bagging groceries or something. I'm telling you, there's no stopping him. I told him the other day, there's no stopping him.
What makes Bob Baffert so good, Wayne?
He's an excellent horseman. He comes off as maybe, you know, being laid back and not as intense. He is an excellent horseman. He knows what to do with the horse. When Justify won his first race, somebody said, well, he won't have the seasoning and everything. I said, are you kidding me? I said, he's in the right barn, trust me. Nate said, well, he might have only two or three races, this and that, a 20-horse field. I said, you guys are whistling in the dark. I said, trust me. Throw all that out in your handicap, and if that horse is the best horse, watch out. He's coming. I really feel that about Bob. I think he just he's better.
Now, the thing is about it is that when I run a horse, I put a pretty good foundation into him. I mean, I probably could have run him earlier, but I wanted to get a good foundation. I really wasn't thinking Kentucky Derby with him. I just let him. He came around. I really thought McKenzie was going to be my Derby horse and could win the Kentucky Derby. So. But these horses, I mean, they come around, and you know and now I'm in a point in my career where Wayne and I, we had to go buy our own, and so now And these agents, they didn't want to send us horses because they were so afraid that we would start buying the horses. And I think that was the toughest part. And now it's like I can sit back now, and now they can, these, you know, if you don't train for those big outfits, they, you know, they have all these good horses, and they send them to you, and it makes my job so much more easier. So but it took me a long time to get to that.
You earned that, though, Bob. You, your eye, your ability to find a runner, they don't just send you. You don't wake up every day and say, look, let's send Lucas and Baffert the horses. You know, you have to earn that. We got some young guys coming up now that are earning that right to get those clientels and everything. But just like Justify's owners, those, you look down the line, those are very important people. They didn't just wake up someday and say, let's give it to Baffert. They gave it to Bob Baffert because he's going to do the best job and he's going to get the job done. You have to earn that.
Two of the greatest the game has ever seen. My thanks to Bob Baffert and Dwayne Lucas for taking the time. That is just part of the visit that I had the privilege of spending with them. The entire interview is going to air this coming Wednesday night on our Trainer Talk show, which is presented by Fasig Tipton. That show will air 6 o'clock Eastern Wednesday night on Sirius 219, XM 201, and worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Don't miss it. So many other stories that they told me are going to air on that show Wednesday night, Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. We'll get to a break, come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Do you know how fast you were going, son?
Call me Ed.
Do you know how fast you were going, Ed?
You mean exactly?
Yes, exactly.
No, not exactly. How fast?
Fast.
Fast, sir?
You were going very fast.
Fast is my job, officer.
Fast is your job?
Yes, sir.
What kind of job?
I deliver, sir.
What do you deliver?
The world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
I thought Jimmy John's had the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
Jimmy John's does have the world's greatest gourmet sandwiches.
So you deliver for Jimmy John's?
I deliver for Jimmy John's.
So do you always deliver fast?
I always deliver fast.
How fast?
I deliver subs so fast you'll freak.
It's not smart to freak a cop, son.
You didn't order Jimmy John's sub, sir.
So if I did order a Jimmy John's sub, when would I get it?
Now.
What if I don't want it now?
Then call later.
Or I could pick it up myself.
Or you could pick it up yourself.
Because I'm pretty fast, too.
I'm sure you are, sir.
Very fast.
I believe you, sir.
Faster than you.
No way, sir.
Way faster.
In your dreams.
You dissing me, son.
No, sir, I'm polite.
Fast and polite.
Very polite and very, very fast.
Is that a challenge, son?
No, sir, it's a fact.
Let's burn rubber, kid.
You wouldn't be fair.
Why not?
You've got a fully blown V8 Camaro with slicks and headers.
So?
I've got a 10-speed bike.
I'll let you off with a warning.
Order Jimmy John's sandwich delivery today. Jimmy John's, where fresh and fast meet.
Eclipse champion Blaine notched over $4.3 million in earnings, including this historic victory over Zenyatta. Now he's making a name for himself as an internationally successful stallion. Recent top runners include multiple graded stakes winner Fault and French Classic winner Senga. In the ring, his yearlings have sold up to $350,000. Among the top sires of his crop by lifetime graded stakes horses, his 2018 stud fee offers outstanding value. Blaine, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Power.
Tapazar's going to keep Rail Trip at bay, and Tapazar, a sterling performance today. Tapazar and Cory Nakatani take the dirt mile.
Passion.
It is all Monoboy girls to take the Central Bank Ashland.
Performance.
Midnight Bizu is third on the far outside. It's Wonder Gadot, and on the inside, Monoboy Girl. It's down to these two, and it's going to be Monoboy Girl in the Kentucky Oaks.
Gainsway Stallion Tapazar is Tappet's leading miler, breaking his maiden by 10.5 lengths as a 2-year-old, wiring the Grade 3 Sham Stakes by 4.5 lengths at 3, and running away with the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile at 4. A top 5 third crop sire, now with more than $5 million in progeny earnings, including Monomoy Girl, a game winner of the Grade 1 $1 million Kentucky Oaks at Churchill Downs. Tapazar, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
Stakes.
You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Triple Crown.
Equine Forum presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Kurt Becker sitting in for the Pontiff here this morning, getting ready to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum on this Preakness morning. But we are not done yet. We return this afternoon, 3 Eastern, with 4.5 hours of Preakness coverage. You'll hear the undercard from 3 to 5, and then at 5 o'clock we'll segue into our coverage of Preakness 143, that coverage airing on affiliates all over the country on SiriusXM Channel 93 and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. So make sure you check out our website right now for an affiliate near you and to listen worldwide and, of course, for all the information on that coverage. Kurt Becker, fun interview there with Wayne and with Bob. They are simply sensational. My thanks to them again. Have received several messages already from people that have really enjoyed it. So the full interview Wednesday night is something to behold, too. Wait till they hear that.
Yeah, if you just had one of those guys sit down for an interview, that's fantastic. But to get them both at the same time, even better.
Yeah, simply tremendous. All right, what do you think? Who wins Preakness 143, my friend? What do you think?
Second verse, same as the first. I'm going to go Justify with Good Magic second. And I think if you want a long shot, Lone Sailor maybe comes home and picks up the pieces for third.
I think I may flip that one around. I just have a feeling about this one this afternoon. I'm going to go with Good Magic turning the tables on our good friend Justify. Our poll question of the morning at HRN on Twitter, we asked people, who are you going to take in this prop bet? You can have Justify or you can have the field. 73% of HRN Nation saying, we'll take Justify.
Wow.
How about that? Yeah, it is. All right, our thanks to all of our guests for being with us here this morning. Tanya Gunther in the first half of the program, along with Vance Hansen from Brisnet.com, Edgar Prado, John Service, and, of course, Bob Baffert and D. Wayne Lucas, all those guests receiving a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. We're back to kick everything off 3 o'clock Eastern time this afternoon. Make sure you're back with us as well. For our producer, Lee Delapina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studio, for Sean C., for Kurt Becker, I'm Mike Penna. Go